This is the third episode of the Nakazawa Show. Today we're going to be talking about inclusion in a distributed world. It's going to take about 20 minutes, and today is the April 14th, 2021, and this is a topic that is really important to me. If you're an engineering manager looking to become an engineering manager, or an engineer looking to build a more inclusive team, this podcast or video or this post is for you. So let me narrate it for you. Remote and distributed work is an unstoppable trend that was recently accelerated by 5 to 10 years. It allows people to live where they want to live, and people who couldn't move or regularly visit an office before can find better jobs. Remote work is great for a more diverse workforce, and I'm glad that this trend is here to stay. However, it's much harder to build a shared sense of purpose and build empathy for colleagues. This post exists to help people and teams adapt better to this new era. A new era. I expect many companies will operate with a hybrid model of partial work from an office and partial work from home or somewhere else. Even if you aren't sure whether you'll work from an office or elsewhere in the future, the age of a singular big headquarter per company with everyone in the same place has passed. The new norm will be multiple engineering hubs, fully remote companies, or a mix of headquarter, hubs, and remote work. However, there are trade-offs to remote work. While many people prefer a silent home office because it makes them more productive, it can be an isolating experience. Some people mitigate this by attending co-working spaces, but that usually doesn't help build a shared sense of belonging with their own team. Many essential moments that bring people closer together do not exist without meeting in person, and they're hard to recreate. Sure, we see faces pop up on video calls that we can interact with, but the human connection is kind of missing, and it's really hard to get to know people and to understand them. All the work we do at home is in front of our devices, it's kind of just in our head. The reduced social interactions make it harder to meet people and build the network. There are no serendipitous interactions in which one can learn, solve problems together, or maybe make friends. Many people just work on their tasks, and it looks like people are more effective in the short term based on like recent studies, but people are likely having a worse time long term. It's no surprise that people who have a best friend at work perform better and are happier, and there's a link on the post with the study. Another angle is company culture. How do you retain a great company culture when everyone switches to remote work? How do you build a fantastic and unique culture with a fully remote team? Culture is living your values every day, and it's really hard to do that without a shared sense of purpose. This quote from Stratechery on leaks really resonates with me. And just to be clear, I recently left Facebook and I have no first-hand knowledge of leaks. Rather, I think Ben Thompson articulates the challenges of remote work pretty well. I strongly suspect, though, that the closing of Facebook's offices has played a large role as well. The likelihood of an employee feeling a sense of solidarity or common purpose is almost certainly less when said employee is only interacting with his or her coworkers via video call instead of in person. Moreover, that reduced interaction is increasingly replaced or accompanied by alternative interactions, particularly on Twitter, that pulls said employee in a very different direction. End of quote. Finally, I was reminded of just how different working remotely is when a former reporter whom I never met in person watched a video of me and said, "Wow, I had a completely different image of what you look like. This is literally the first time I see you outside of the usual talking head frame that you're seeing me in now." It's no surprise that many engineering managers prefer being in an office with their reports. So let's get to the recommendations. What can you do if you're a manager or a leader who wants to get to know their coworkers better, improve relationships with their reports and within the team, increase belonging, and build a shared sense of purpose? I approached inclusion with intentionality. I tried many things and I'm excited to share what worked for me. The recommendations all build on each other. We'll go through the weekly social, sharing personal status updates, buddy and mentorship programs, retrospectives, the weekly schedule, asynchronous decision making, and meeting in person. The weekly social. Early into remote work, I had a realization. The best moments in the office were team lunches. We tried to sit together for lunch as often as possible. Lunches are so valuable because they're informal, optional, and conversations aren't bound to work topics. There's usually a time limit when people want to get back to their actual work, and it's a great way to learn about your peers. Organizing team lunches over video calls does not work, and I tried, and it's unsatisfactory. So how do we recreate the feeling of a team lunch without feeling forced? I recommend setting up a social meeting with the entire team once a week. Depending on the team size, this will be a 30 to 60 minute meeting. 30 minutes if it's less than 6 people, and 60 minutes if it's up to like 12 people, but that's pretty big already. Each of them should have a unique topic to cover each of the meetings. Ask everyone on the team to contribute, and for some of the meetings, decide on a topic 2 days ahead and invite the people on the team to prepare. While you can come up with a quick question during the meeting, the great ones are usually the ones that people prepare for. As the manager, or you know, the self-proclaimed CSO of your team, the chief social officer, you have to prepare an introduction for each meeting, usually just to break the ice, get everyone comfortable. And usually you have news relevant to the entire group, or maybe you can do a brief Q&A about a topic pertinent to the team, which you should also share in writing later because some people might not be attending. And then move on to asking the question and pick a random person in the group to go first. Each person should stick to a time limit so that everyone gets to participate. And we usually, on the team at Facebook that I was managing, we usually went with a random approach where the current person picks who shares their answer next. And it's always kind of a different structure. You may have been in a variant of this type of meeting before, and the questions might have been pretty dull. I have been, and I tried to come up with a list of boring questions that you should avoid, but I couldn't because those meetings were so dull and I couldn't remember. The questions weren't meaningful. You have to ask questions that will be meaningful to people, which sometimes require them to show vulnerability. Depending on the team, you have to ease into it with simple questions. Like, let people talk about their favorite food, hobbies, favorite place in the world, a video that they think is funny, or explain something unique about themselves. If your team is already pretty close, you can move on to questions that consistently lead to extraordinary and memorable meetings in which everyone gets to know each other better. One caveat is to make sure that everyone is aware of what is appropriate to share. In some teams, there's a lot of trust and people feel safe sharing personal stories. I recommend slowly building towards sharing good stories and maybe even avoid specific topics altogether for other teams. Don't get anyone in trouble. Here's a list of example questions. One that I really love is share childhood or teenage photos of yourself and tell a story about them. Share one or more favorite engineering projects you worked on before joining the current company, you know, with screenshots or videos. Show a photo, video, a street view of your hometown. Tell us what makes it unique to you or special to you. How did you get your job at the current company? How likely was it that you ended up there? Why did you join this team? What is something that you'd like to improve this year, personal or work, that you'd like the entire team to hold you accountable for? If you weren't an engineer, scientist, researcher, designer, or whatever you are, what would you be instead and why? What's something that you did as a child and teenager that you miss doing? Tell us about something that you're still embarrassed about today. What's something dumb that you did as a child or teenager? Tell us about a trip, event, weekend where something went wrong. Or if everyone has children, something like what makes your child or children so special to you? And feel free to make your own questions. And please let me know if you come up with ones that work really well. I'll add it to the post. Not only will you get to know people, but you'll also learn to understand cultural differences across the team better. It'll help you be a better manager and makes people more mindful of each other's behaviors. Just to be clear, sharing has to be entirely optional. Nobody should feel pressured to share personal stories, and anyone can skip topics that are too personal for them. Usually, I prefer attendance to be mandatory, but sharing to be optional. It doesn't quite work when the meeting is optional and only a third of the team shows up each time. People may be shy, or they prefer to be very strict about their separation between life and work. Approach it privately with them, ask about their reservations, recommend how they can participate if they want to, and agree on something that works for everyone. A lot of this can be preempted by proactively asking people for permission to start doing social meetings like this. If you do this every week, I guarantee you that the team that you're working with will be healthier within about 3 months. People will be happier, produce better results, and almost certainly they will trust each other more. The second one, share personal status updates. Let people know about your whereabouts. When working remotely, all you see is the output from people. Somebody sends pull requests at 7 a.m., 3 p.m., and 10 p.m., and wow, they must be working super hard all day. Observing that can lead to a lot of pressure and stress across the team, as individuals may think they have to work harder too. What you don't see is when your colleagues aren't working. For example, in the previous example, maybe the person woke up and shared code that they wrote the day before, then spent time with the children until getting back to work between 3 p.m. and 10 p.m., during which time they also cooked dinner and took a break and whatnot. Other people may prefer to work out during the day and work late at night, as long as the entire team is available at a certain agreed upon time, and people don't miss meetings, that should be okay. It makes sense for everyone to share their schedule and availability. You can even do this as part of the weekly socials, you know, what is your work schedule like? This exercise builds empathy for each other and makes people more mindful of everyone else's work-life balance. Besides, people should also announce deviations to their regular schedule, like when somebody is missing a team meeting because they aren't well or they have an appointment. An extension that I've seen work on some teams is to share what people have been up to on weekends or what they cooked or ate during the holidays. Sharing such private information is not for everyone and all the teams, and I'm not talking about tracking what your colleagues do in their personal life, but instead I'm asking them to voluntarily share things that they're comfortable sharing about themselves to lighten the mood. You can make the team more comfortable by telling them why it is so valuable to share more. And, you know, feel free to point them to this post, video, or podcast. To make space for these updates and conversations, I like to have a private social chat for the teams I work with. Private so that nobody feels like they're sharing with the whole company, and social to set the expectation that it's okay to miss messages because they aren't work-related. The third recommendation that we're talking today is buddy and mentorship programs. Ensure that people don't feel lonely. It doesn't matter if they work alone or on a project, they lead a big team, or they have a big family at home. People can still feel lonely. Buddy and mentorship structures can provide support, both technical and personal. From the Management Startup Hack, a previous post, mentorship structures. Identify or create genuine situations in which people need to help each other out. Pair up new hires with a social buddy and a technical buddy. Pair up experienced people with each other to help them fill gaps. Mentorship structures ensure that everyone has at least one person besides their manager looking out for them. I usually suggest starting with weekly 30-minute meetings that can be increased in cadence or length if necessary. Buddies can set up informal meetings to catch a break and talk in a more relaxed setting. For new hires, it doesn't stop there. Buddies can recommend and maybe even set up meetings with other people on the team or the organization. This makes new hires feel like other people are interested in getting to know them. Mentors and buddies have the added benefit that they can take on management work and therefore free up their manager's schedule for other tasks. Mentors can improve the team as more people will be aware of how individuals are doing, and as a manager it's helpful to check in about how mentees are doing. Maybe a mentor picked up on something that's bothering someone on the team, but the mentee doesn't feel comfortable sharing that with their direct manager. Maybe somebody isn't enjoying their project, perhaps they're stuck. It's easy to miss these things when you're not working in the same room together, and more people checking in with each other will surface those issues sooner. The fourth recommendation is retrospectives. Organize retrospectives to take collective ownership of the team's direction and give everyone an opportunity to propose improvements. I'm not too fond of processes just for the sake of process. I much prefer to pick specific things from established processes and then work that may work with a particular team. One of those is doing retrospectives targeted at collectively driving the team towards a specific outcome, be it understanding a mistake that was made, learning how to improve things for themselves, or exploring what they'd like to work on next. I know the purpose of a retrospective is to look back, but almost always the reason to look back is to figure out how to do better in the future. These meetings tend to take longer than any others, usually between 90 and 120 minutes. They require preparation and a lot of coordination. Because of that, I generally don't recommend doing more than one retrospective every 3 to 6 months. I like to prepare a collaborative whiteboard such as Excalibur that everyone joins and works on together. The topics are agreed upon before and shared ahead of time so that everyone has a chance to prepare themselves. While every team is different, here are some of the topics and questions that I discussed in previous retrospectives. There are three categories. One is team focus. Celebrate a project, team member, or goal from the past 6 months. What worked well in the past 6 months that we should keep doing? What didn't work well that we should change? How can we work more effectively together remotely? Engineering or project focus. What are the systems, tools, products that have poor quality and need improvements? What are our partner teams? Who are the responsible individuals on our team? This one helps to identify communication structures and makes the team aware of their surroundings. And then third, how can we reduce the time spent on on-call duties? And then the third category is people focus. What's your highlight from the past 6 months? What's something that didn't go well that you'd like to improve? Why are you on this team? What will make you stay on this team? What new experiences would you like to make in the next 6 months? and how would you like to develop your career? I generally recommend people-focused retrospectives only for teams that already have achieved a high degree of trust. Only if people are willing to be vulnerable with each other does it make sense to discuss personal growth with everyone else around them. After each person adds their thoughts to the current topic or question, spend a bit of time discussing the answers. Try to identify common themes or disagreements while ensuring that people don't go off topic. On the post, there is an example of what the "how would you like to develop your career" should look like in a retrospective. And usually that requires everyone to create their own space on this virtual whiteboard, copy a box or make some sort of graph there, a chart or whatever, insert their name and then adjust the colors so that it kind of looks unique, and then list a few things that they'd like to improve on. I'm also on the post providing an example template that you can use to get an idea and also an example of what the retrospective might look like. After a retrospective concludes, one person should summarize the findings and discuss changes to the project plans, team culture, or the personal goals. Retrospectives are helpful to identify what went wrong in the past and what could be done better in the future. Without following up, the same mistakes will happen again and issues will persist. The fifth recommendation is weekly schedules. When somebody gets stuck on a task in an office, they can turn around and ask a colleague for help immediately. Remote work adds friction and can slow things down. New hires and less experienced engineers often don't feel comfortable asking enough questions and may also feel lost trying to prioritize their work. Putting together a schedule collaboratively makes teammates feel more involved and in control of their workload. Experienced engineers, on the other hand, they usually have a daily, weekly, or even monthly schedule. They tend to have a pretty good idea for structuring their work, how to parallelize their work to avoid being blocked, and they stick with deadlines. Scheduling is a skill that often takes years to develop, and usually I don't care how people organize their work, I just care that they do. Quite often I find that new hires or less experienced engineers struggle with this, not because they don't know how to plan, but because they never had a chance to learn from somebody at the same company about how they should structure their work. I start by asking for a schedule to be shared with me at first, or I may even show them multiple different methods that I've seen work, like be it my own, that of a peer, or somebody that they work with, and then I let them choose which process that they'd like to try, and then I focus on getting them to stick with it for a while. Initially, I bring it up in every one-on-one meeting until I'm confident that they own their schedule themselves. Here are two methods that I've seen work well. One, use an actual calendar to plan out their rough focus for the next several months. Start by blocking off all holidays and vacation days. Decide on priorities and mark each day or week with one primary focus. Two, use a Kanban board with tasks and a rough duration and priority assigned to each of them. The initial schedule doesn't have to be completely accurate. It should be flexible enough so that changes can be made and communicated at any time. Again, I do not care about which process people follow as long as they have one that works for them and they don't even have to share it with me. I'm not trying to micromanage people. I'm trying to help them manage themselves and their own time better. And the more mutual understanding we have of what is going on when working remotely, the better it usually is for everyone. The sixth recommendation is asynchronous decision making. When working remotely, especially across time zones, never make decisions in meetings that require presence. Ideally, all decisions are made asynchronously by your preferred communication medium. Not only does this take the pressure off of video calls, but it also ensures that everyone has a chance to participate in the decision-making process. Think of people who feel uncomfortable speaking up in meetings or people who are naturally quieter. Text-based decision-making equalizes many of these differences instead of letting a charming but loud person steamroll everyone. Asynchronous decision-making has the added benefit that it forces teams to document their decision-making process and the decisions that were made and why. Documentation makes it easier for new hires to gain context and for the team to look back at why something might have gone wrong. Sometimes an exception has to be made, and you have to make a decision in a meeting. Make sure you share the possible options and the trade-offs and preferences ahead of the meeting so that everyone has shared context. And the final recommendation is to meet in person. All of the above suggestions are useful when a team cannot work together in person. However, meeting up every 3 to 6 months for social activities is still the most effective way to get a team closer together. There are two types of offsites that I've been part of. One, the experience focus: team building exercises, hiking, climbing, playing games, going to a theme park, things like that. And the other one is open-ended, or offsets with an open-ended agenda, usually accompanied by a lunch or dinner, and then hanging out in a lovely space. One of the problems with experience-focused offsites is that they tend not to be inclusive. People may not enjoy hiking, they don't like specific games, or they have disabilities that prevent them from attending. That's why I prefer open-ended offsites that have just enough content or like activities to get people excited, but leave enough room to spark dozens of conversations. I like the ones that require traveling to a place. The time in a car or in a train with colleagues on the way there and back is unstructured and relaxed in a way that's hard to recreate in other ways. More often than not, one or more people will have personal reasons for not participating, and that's totally fine. So don't make big decisions during offsites or announcements or anything like that, and be mindful of what people might be missing out on. Other recommendations: there are a ton more ways to make everyone feel included. Here are a few more. Participation: be aware of who isn't participating and why. Ask in private, nudge people gently to raise participation rates. Be mindful of the difference between not participating for, you know, a good reason and not participating because they don't feel confident speaking up. Exerting pressure to participate is never a solution. Consistency: be consistent with how you're treating people. Don't pick favorites, include everyone, and don't make awkward comments if people aren't willing to participate. Create a space where it's okay to decline things and don't pressure people. Belonging: make people aware of other groups that they should join. Ask them what they're interested in or direct them to groups that they may belong to. Identify opportunities: many people don't feel comfortable asking for things. Watch out for their needs and recommend them or sign them up to optional programs to help them with their career. For example, I signed up many people for English as a second language classes that meaningfully improved people's verbal and written communication and then helped them in their career later. If you read carefully, you'll find that all of the above recommendations, they build on each other. A weekly social meeting ensures that people get to know each other and build trust. Retrospectives require trust and help identify gaps and expectations. Mentorship structures can fill those gaps, all while gaining an understanding by sharing a bit of what is going on in everyone's lives. A weekly schedule ensures that people know their priorities and stay unblocked. In the ideal case, the above suggestions lead to teams where everyone has a voice, can participate in team decisions, make themselves understood, and feel a sense of belonging. If you're trying this with your team, please share the results with me. Please tweet about this article or share it with your friends and colleagues. Discuss it with the community. There's a link right below this video or near this podcast. Or email me. I'm really curious to hear what you think about this. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.